Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I think, are we on? Can let me.
Can you hear us, Don? We're on.
We're back up. Okay, I think that we're back up. I'm going to check.
Okay, we're going to check real quick.
Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. We're all set. We're up.
Okay. I'll talk about that.
So call in, have everybody call in again, because then he's on. He should be coming up on the board. That's okay. But we are back up.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Call in again. I want to put you on the air to ask that question.
Yeah, call in.
All right, I think we are back up and running. I'm sorry. Yes, we are. Everything is working now. I don't know why it wasn't working before. But we have these Thurblings, I call them. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it is a direct attack, frankly. So you are up and running, and go ahead and take off.
I was talking about the Word of God. And is it saying host?
I'm not hearing anything.
Oh. Yeah.
Of course, you're not saying anything either.
Get the number from Dennis. Okay, here we are. The Word of God. Those of you who are listening to this broadcast discussion, I am sure, believe that God is real, that God exists, God created everything, God knows everything, God knows what goes on in the deepest, darkest corner
recesses.
Of the deepest, darkest recesses of the deepest, darkest pit. And God, who can do all of that and does all of that, certainly has the ability to protect his words, to keep his words available and able to be understood by those who are truly seeking the truth. He preserves those words. I've read that text about as the rain and the snow come down and water the earth, making it produce seed into the sprout and the grain and the full head. So too will his word, like seed that is planted, endure until the harvest. The Word of God is very important for us to focus on, to know, and to understand. That is our life. Upon that are we judged. And I'm going to read a text that is one of my favorite. Most people don't have a judgment text as one of their favorites, but this is one of my favorites. It is definitely a judgment text. You find it in John chapter 12, starting with verse 44. Jesus declared publicly. He said this so everybody could hear. He wasn't just sharing this with his disciples. The thousands of people that were surrounding him, hoping to see another great miracle, he announced this to them. Whoever believes in me, believes not in me, but in the one who sent me. And whoever sees me, sees the one who sent me. I, the light, have come into the world so that whoever believes in me need not stay in the dark anymore. Now, I want you to get the idea here of faith. Just faith. Just belief. I, the light, have come into the world so that whoever believes in me need not stay in the dark anymore. He's not talking about believing in his existence. Believing that he told the truth. Well, it's nothing to go, yeah, he came here and he told the truth. Well, what was that truth? Well, that's not important. What's important is that I believe that he came here and told the truth. Well, because, you know, we're saved by grace.
I could hear Dr. Right? Rich saying something about how important the truth is in a court trial.
If anyone hears my words and does not keep them faithfully. Oh, that's a little more than believing that he told the truth, right?
It's not keeping them by faith.
No.
Faithfully is an action,
Not
yes.
It's not an idea. By the way, Rick, if you want, we can put Donna to ask that question if you
okay,
if
as
you
soon
want.
As I finish
sure.
this.
Just let me know.
It is not I who will condemn him, since I have come not to condemn the world. Since I have not come to condemn the world. He did not come to condemn the world. So that's what people will say. Well, he didn't come to condemn the world, so we're not condemned. He came to save the world. If you just cut little snippets of texts and verses here and there, and you paste them together, you can make a case for what you believe in. But it certainly won't be the truth. It'll be bits and pieces of words that were conveying the truth in the whole, but not anymore. He who rejects me and refuses my words has his judge already. Well, people say, well, I don't reject him. Well, what about his words? Well, his words are not important for my salvation. My salvation is important for me to believe that he existed and that he told the truth. The truth, though, is irrelevant. That's what these people will say.
Right.
He who rejects me and refuses my words has his judge already. The word itself that I have spoken will be his judge on the last day. Now, what is that last day that he's talking about? The last day of their life?
No, judgment.
The last day of the world? The judgment. The judgment. Keep that in mind. Mm.
Don, this is Dennis again. You called in earlier and talked with us. Would you mind asking your question again for the show? We'd appreciate it.
Okay, I was just going to comment on the fact that there's quite a crisis in the Catholic Church about the priests and their child molesting and connected back to the original and historic paganism that might be involved in some of the deeper recesses of that problem.
Thank you, Don, for that very good question. He was asking about the practice of paganism has apparently been going on in the Catholic Church, and every once in a while these accusations of pedophilia by priests and all kinds of other unspeakable atrocities. They all worship Lucifer, Satan, the devil. They all do. The Catholic Church and all of its children. By that, I'm talking about the other Christian churches. The other Christian churches, of course, would deny that they have any... They left the Catholic Church. They may have left the Catholic Church and some of her doctrines, but they kept a lot of the Catholic Church also. I don't know if you have had a chance to take a look at the audience hall that was built about, 25 years ago. The Vatican. The building is constructed to look like the head of a serpent.
Actually, it looks kind of like the inside of one.
Well, when you're inside the building, it looks like the inside, it like you would be inside the head of a serpent. The only place that you would be, the only way you would actually be inside the head of a serpent is if the serpent had swallowed you.
Right.
But when you're sitting inside, you look at the roof is scales. And on the walls, these high walls, which kind of arch up and over like a serpent's head, there are two windows, which look like serpent's eyes. They actually are serpentine eyes. And then up front are fangs at the platform where the Pope sits. In fact, the Pope has a throne there, which has Lucifer himself depicted as standing up over the throne. You have heard that those people who are fighting most diligently against the current leadership of the United States and the president all have deep, dark secrets. And I don't want to go into the horrific character and practices that these people do. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on Twitter. You can find it on the internet if you just search it. There's a lot of information there. There is one YouTube video that I would recommend if you want to go down that rabbit hole. It is by SGT Report, and it is, and what it is the rabbit hole is deeper and darker than you ever knew. And it talks about all this. Now, if you don't come away with a sense that this world has totally and completely gone into paganism, I don't know what else would do that. There is one person who had been a fairly high-up government official. In fact, what they say is that the CIA runs all the pedophilia rings. That this individual who had been, had joined the Church of Satan with Anton LaVey, and then found that that Church of Satan wasn't satanic enough for him. And he went off and started his own, which was called the Temple of Set, S-E-T. And that the reason he called it the Temple of Set is because Lucifer had actually spoken with him and told him that his ancient name, and that's what he wanted to be known by. Hmm. I want to read another text. I can't remember his name, but it's in that rabbit hole. It was this person who was in the government. I can't remember his name. Maybe it might have been Peter or something, but I'm not sure. In Daniel 11, you can tell how thoroughly I basically list those things and kind of an idea, and I certainly don't want to become real familiar with it. That's really not my purpose. In Daniel chapter 11 and verse 11, this chapter is a description of what will be going on during the time of the trumpets. Now, I want you to understand that as I understand now how the apocalyptic prophecies work, what's very important to know is that the devil knows all the apocalyptic prophecies that we have. He knows them all. He has studied them thoroughly. Every single element of every single prophecy, from information to timing, he knows. He knows what God is revealing because he knows how to read God. He's not termed wise for no reason. You know, when we read about in Genesis chapter 3 about the serpent as the wisest creature of God's creation, and I don't know that God is specifically referring to snakes, that if, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again because it is important. If you knew ahead of time about your future, and you knew that if you did a certain thing, that it would be bad for you, like a flight on an airplane, you knew that plane was going to crash and everyone on board would be killed, would you get on that plane anyway? No. So the devil knows what God is saying about his future and outcome. God has given dates. God has been very specific about his activities. So if the devil doesn't want that to happen, has God tied his hands so that he can't prevent it? Or can he prevent it? Can he alter that? I'll tell you, a few years ago, I would say absolutely not. But now that I understand a little bit better about the seven thunders, I say maybe and probably he can. When I take Daniel 7:25, where it says, and his intent will be to alter the set times. His intent will be to alter the set times and change the law.
What was it?
Daniel 7:25.
Oh, 25. Okay. Got it.
How do you alter time? Well, some people say, well, we changed the day from Saturday to Sunday. Well, you know.
Not really.
I mean, obviously, he was the one who did that, but that wouldn't be altering time. If he knows what's going to happen to him, and he knows God has revealed in prophecy how it's going to happen, when it's going to happen, and the outcome, you know, it would be like he would do like what you and I would do if we knew that a plane we were going to fly on was going to crash and there would be no survivors. He's going to alter that. He's going to do his best to alter that. He knows about quantum computing and artificial intelligence and all that. He knows how to use all that. In fact, there are some people who say that there's actually time alteration, time travel. Now, whether that's true or not, I'm telling you that that information is out there and that people say they have actually traveled through time. That, to me, explains why in Revelation 10, John heard seven thunders, and he was about to write down what he heard. He heard it, but God said, don't write it down.
Yep.
So some will say, well, but the seven thunders must have been the seven churches, and that information would seal up. Look, if God said to Daniel, don't write it down, why would he write down the seven churches?
Does it make sense?
Some say, well, it's the seven trumpets. Well, same thing. Why would God tell John not to write down what he heard, but John wrote it down anyway? I believe that John was the only one who heard what the seven thunders said. That's why it's called thunders. He's not telling anybody. He didn't write it down. He heard it, but he did not write it down because he was instructed not to write it down. Why would God tell John something, information which John thought was going along with the prophecies he was receiving and that he was writing down, and he was ready to write down what he'd heard, and it was told, no. Didn't say this is all sealed up. It wasn't sealed up. It was to be kept hidden. It was a secret. You know, it's like God whispering in John's ear. Psst, 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 psst. Nobody else heard. When the delay is announced, now, there's many reasons for the delay. There are two delays that I know, and maybe even three. There's the delay of the bridegroom going to get his bride. And I've gone through that so many times that I hope that by now you understand why the delay of getting the bride. It's because the bride is not ready. Then there's a delay of the four winds, the release of the four winds. The four winds is the final judgment. But if no one on the face of the earth is righteous, then the four winds do exactly what the flood did and even more, because they will destroy everyone on the face of the earth. So the four winds are being held back. That's another delay. What really is the greatest significant delay caused by? It is caused by the devil altering the set times. There will come a point in time where the road to judgment is connected with. So the reality that we are in right now will connect with the reality road that ends in judgment. And then it is locked in, and the devil cannot alter it because he does not know. He does not know, because the prophecies don't talk about it, that is the line to judgment, and he can't change it. When that happens, the angel announces the end of the delay, the little scroll which contains the seven thunders, information that the seven thunders had, right, is given to John. John eats it. It's a prophecy again. You are to prophesy again. John is doing this he's kind of participating in what happens when the announcement of the end of the delay is made.
Right.
That I believe is probably the faithful and wise bondservant. But I'm not saying that absolutely is, but it probably is. Who eats that and then realizes that he needs to now give another prophecy that defines what will lead to the final judgment. A lot of what has already been given will take place, but specific elements will be made known. And I believe that this is what the secret intention of God is. The secret intention of God, which the angel announces at the end of the delay, when he announces the end of the delay.
Just a procedural thing. We have 32 minutes on our timer clock on Blog Talk Radio. We have about 17 minutes left on to the top of the hour. My suggestion, we just keep going on the Blog Talk Radio clock and finish out the show for the full hour.
Okay. Thank you. So, reading now in Daniel chapter 11, starting at verse 11, and this is talking about the ruler of the world who is in control of the armies of the world, and they are in the battle, which would be the sixth trumpet. Forces of his will come and profane the sanctuary citadel. They will abolish the perpetual sacrifice and install the disastrous abomination there. Those who break the covenant, he will corrupt by flatteries, but the people who know their God will stand firm and take action.
I'm not finding this. 11:11, Daniel?
Daniel 11:11.
Okay, that's not what I'm getting.
Well, this is in the Jerusalem Bible. Are you reading in the Jerusalem Bible?
I'm reading in the NASB. It says the king of the south will be enraged.
That is up. That's up in. I'm sorry. 31. Hang on. My eyes have gone crazy.
31. Okay, gotcha.
Down 11:31. I'm sorry. Yeah. I messed it up. Anyway, those are the people who are learned will instruct many for some days. However, they will be brought down by sword and flame, by captivity and plundering, and thus brought down, little help will they receive, though many will be plotting on their side. Of the learned, some will be brought down, as a result of which certain of them will be purged, purified and made white until the time of the end, for the appointed time is still to come. Now, we will, I want to read, is that 20? Yeah, let's start reading with 21. 11, 21. In this place there will arise a wretch. He will not be given royal honors, but will insinuate himself into them in his own time and gain possession of the kingdom by intrigue. Armies will be utterly routed and crushed by him, the prince of the covenant too. Still conspiring, he will go from treachery to treachery, ever growing stronger despite smallness of his following. In his own time, he will invade the richest provinces, acting as his fathers or his father's fathers never acted, distributing plunder, spoil, and wealth among them, plotting his strategies against fortresses for a time. Then we will go to verse 36. The king will do as he pleases, growing more and more arrogant. Considering himself greater than all the gods, he will utter incredible blasphemies against the God of gods, and he will thrive until the wrath reaches bursting point. For what has been decreed will certainly be fulfilled. Heedless of his father's gods. Now, that bit right there, heedless of his father's gods, what's that information actually saying? Is it saying that his is talking about what is here would be the devil? Or is it the fathers that the devil had installed to authorize and conduct his
operations? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
His processes,
mm-hmm. agendas.
Yeah, well, his spiritual activities. Because, you know, when we say God of our fathers, what are we talking about? Isn't that a verse in Faith of Our Fathers?
Mm-hmm.
God of our fathers, whose almighty hand? So,
yeah.
The God of the fathers. Here is what we're talking about as he, the God, small g, of his fathers. He was the God of the fathers of paganism and every false religious practice on the face of the earth. Heedless of his father's gods, heedless of the one whom women love, heedless of any god whatever, he will consider himself greater than them all. Instead of them, he will honor the god of fortresses. Now, that word I've looked up, the one that's translated fortresses, and it actually is talking about strength and might. You know, a mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing.
It is Psalms H4581, Nasek. The first definition of it is a place or a means of safety or protection of defense. Then you have fortress, fortresses, helmet, protection, refuge, safety, strength, strongholds.
And refuge is another one. He is honoring the God of strength. Will honor a God unknown to his ancestors with gold and silver, precious stones, and valuable presents. He will use the people of an alien God who to defend the fortresses. He will confer great honors on those who will acknowledge him by giving them wide authority and by farming out the land at a price. Now turn to Matthew chapter 24. Starting with verse 42. Now, what I'm going to do with this part here is I want you to see it as another prophecy concerning the stone cut out without hands. So, yesterday I talked about that. Take the information that you heard from yesterday's study and put this in to expand on that. In fact, this is describing the activity that actually is what cuts that stone out. What I hope you see is that there's no divine
assistance, or
in other words, God does not come in and cut the stone out. He has provided the way for the stone to cut itself out. So that in that way, he's involved, but not like taking the Israelites out of Egypt, where he poured out 10 plagues on Egypt and then brought the people out of Egypt. There was a pillar of cloud by day, a pillar of fire at night. That is cutting a stone out with hands. What happened was is that the priests took it upon themselves to fashion that stone the way they wanted it, so that when the cast ready to be placed, it wouldn't fit.
They built the house to their own specifications, not to God's specification,
and the capstone
didn't fit.
So you can see the wisdom. I mean, this is brilliance. God says, I'm not going to leave the building of this spiritual house up to pastors and preachers and ministers and priests and religious teachers and theologians and all the experts. I am not getting them involved in it at all. I am giving the blueprint. The blueprint is the testimony of Jesus, period, exclamation mark. Now you say, well, what about the law and the prophets? What did the Son of God say about the law and the prophets?
Matthew 5:17, I have not come to destroy the law and the prophets, but I have come to fulfill them, and that fulfilling is showing how to fulfill them.
And not the smallest letter or the tiniest mark will pass from the law until all is completed. And that spiritual house was having its cornerstone laid. Spiritual house was not completed at the cross. The spiritual house was started with the testimony of the Son of God. And that testimony is going to fashion the stone, which will grow into a mighty mountain, which will fill the whole earth. So, what we read here in Matthew is the beginning. In fact, this starts a sequence which goes from the stone cutting itself out to the what the kingdom of God is, or the kingdom of the heavens is, when the master returns to his household. He returns to his kingdom. He returns to his kingdom. And he cannot return to his kingdom until he has a kingdom to return to. That's an important point that I hope you understand. That ladder that Jacob saw, that vision that he had, a ladder with angels going up and down on. The base of that ladder was in the promised land. That's where Jacob was sleeping with his head on the pillow. The rock was his pillow, where he wrestled with the angel. The base of the ladder was in the promised land. The top of the ladder was in the heavens. That was the connection. The angels going up and down on the ladder was what Jacob was saying about his offspring that would possess that land would be the kingdom with a connection to heaven with communication going up and down. So when the king returns, he's not coming to take the kingdom away from those whom it was promised to, because it wasn't promised to anyone. It was an invitation to everyone and anyone who pays attention to how you enter this kingdom will be there.
You know, I just had a little aha moment here based on what you were reading in Daniel. The being that is talked about there is trying to take the kingdom by force, this fortress, trying to take the kingdom by force. When Jesus returns, he is not here to take his kingdom back by force. Force of arms, force of intimidation, force of threat. You know, he is there to simply accept what has already been produced.
So the invitation was given. The invitation, as I've said, is the gospel of the kingdom. The gospel of the kingdom is a testimony of Jesus. It is what he proclaimed in the cities and towns and in the temple. And there, this account here in Matthew chapter 24 is describing just that. Verse 42. So stay awake, because you do not know the day when your master is coming. And this is spiritually. This is not physically. It is spiritually. He's not saying don't ever go to sleep. What he's saying is that spiritually you need to stay awake. And the way you stay awake spiritually is that you prepare yourself for what you expect. And if you expect to be saved by faith through grace, then how much preparation do you need? And of what value is the word of God?
Of what value is any preparation?
Yes.
Good thought.
So stay awake, because you do not know the day when your master is coming. You may be quite sure of this, that if the householder had known at what time of night the burglar would come, he would have stayed awake and would not have allowed anyone to break through the wall of his house. Therefore, you must stand ready. And I get that picture of Passover night. Do you know what the Hebrews were instructed to do on Passover night? They were to be standing to eat the Passover with their cloak on and their staff ready, because when the angel of death went through and killed all the firstborn that didn't have the blood on the door, they were to immediately go out the door and follow. Stand ready. Be ready to go as soon as your master comes.
By the way, we are coming up on the top of the hour, but we're going to continue on for another 14 minutes and 10 seconds to finish off our hour.
Okay. Stand ready because the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect him. What he expects from everyone, and this is something that is critical information that we all really need to know and be aware of. I have said for a long time, he is not coming back to prepare us.
Mm-mm. We need to be ready.
He is coming back to say, okay, the time is now. You need to go out and wake up the kingdom. Wake up. They're sound asleep. There's not a one of them that's awake. You need to go and wake up the kingdom in the wilderness, spiritually. And it's not going to be, okay, let's sit down and I want to get a few things cleared up. Because he wouldn't be telling us to be standing and ready to go. He comes, he says the time is now, we go out the door and we wake up the kingdom in the wilderness. He's not going to return until he has some people in his kingdom. And these bridesmaids are not in his kingdom. They're in the wilderness still. They're kind of between Egypt and the promised land, so to speak. And spiritually, that's where they are for sure, between Egypt and the promised land. But they're asleep spiritually. So he's coming to his kingdom where his servants are, and he's sending them out to awaken his kingdom, sleeping in the wilderness. What sort of servant then is faithful and wise enough? Oh, you know, I just, when I see that, and this really is, the Jerusalem Bible is really the only one that uses that word enough. What does enough imply?
Well, in this case, it might not be perfection.
Well, what does it imply as far as faith through grace is?
Well,
enough faith, enough grace?
It would have to be involved in information of some kind. And the information from God is always the truth.
Well, faithful enough, you know, yeah, I can turn. But wise enough?
Yeah.
Wisdom is not hope.
Not faith.
Wisdom is not faith. Wisdom is facts
and truth.
Wisdom is a combination of knowledge and understanding.
Yeah. Knowledge is information.
Mm-hmm.
Truth is information. True knowledge is truth and information. Understanding that truth
is knowing what to do with it.
Yeah.
Yes, is the practical
side of it.
Of
right.
Truth, and that is wisdom. Faithful and wise enough for what? Not for the master to return. For what? For what? For the master to place him over his household, faithful and wise enough for the master to do what?
Put him in charge.
Make him head of his household.
Yeah.
So this person does not receive this high position because he has an in with God. Does he?
No.
He is given this place because he has the information needed to feed his fellow servants and bring them to the fullness of the knowledge of truth. One person, who is it? Faithful and wise enough to be able to feed his fellow bondservants so that when his master returns, he will find them ready, standing ready to go and wake up the kingdom. Stone cut out without hands. This faithful and wise enough servant gets it. He learns the testimony of Jesus. He upholds the testimony of Jesus. He lives the testimony of Jesus. And he is sharing this with others who, like him, trust God, believe God, know that God would not leave them as orphans. Would not leave them because he wants nothing more to do with this evil world. These people deserve everything they get. No, there is one. There's one person who takes God seriously and doesn't just keep that to himself, but shares that with others, those who will listen, those who are willing to listen and learn. And they too become faithful and wise, just as this person who has shared this information with them, to give them their food at the proper time. And what is the proper time? When the reality locks in with the one of judgment, when the devil can no longer alter time anymore, when there's nothing he can do to put off his judgment, that is the proper time. But when that proper time comes, God is not then going to wake up his people and get them ready. They need to be ready when that time comes. And that's what he's saying here, to give them their food at the proper time. Just as the Son of God came at the proper time to deliver the food, to plant the seeds, so too he will come when the seeds he planted long, long, long ago have finally ripe fruit. These are the first fruits, by the way. The first fruits, but not the only fruits. 144,000. I tell you solemnly, he will place him over everything he owns. You know,
and by the way, that's a lot, even if that was only on earth. But that is not only on earth.
What does God own?
Everything.
Everything. Because why?
He made it.
He created it all. You know, I think about James and John's mother. I think about John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
I think about John the Baptist because I, you know, I identify with him. It's like he was my brother. I'm sure that he thought he was going to be chief of the disciples when the Messiah came. And yet, the Messiah, after when John the Baptist is questioning, are you the one? Are you the one we're expecting, or should we be looking for another? And James and John's mother is asking Jesus if maybe she could influence a little bit there, and that her two sons would sit, one on the right and one on the left hand of the Messiah in the kingdom. And the Messiah says, that's not up to me. And the Messiah says that of those born of women, there's none greater than John the Baptist, but he who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. Why? What determines that? Here we read about one whom the master will place over his household if he's faithful and wise enough. He will be placed over his household and he will put him in charge of everything he owns. I think of Joseph in Egypt. When he has revealed the dream, the meaning of the dream to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh puts him over everything he owns.
And says, except on the throne, I am Pharaoh.
Do you think that this servant, who's proven faithful and wise enough, is doing it for the position and the honor and the glory? And, you know, if he was doing it for that, he would have quit doing it a long time ago. God knows. God is never fooled. And God is never a fool. God does not deceive. God informs. And those who know their God will remain faithful and true to the very end, no matter when that takes place.
And God doesn't use anyone that uses deception to bring people into the kingdom.
Why does this servant share with these others who are described as fellow servants? Why does he share with them? Why doesn't he just keep it to himself and wait to see what happens? Because he knows God and he loves God and he knows what God wants, what God needs. God needs harvesters. The harvest is ready. The judgment is here. God needs people who know him and know what to do and when to do it. And my friends, the when is now. Evil in this world has reached such a level as if it's the same as it was in the days of the flood, it's there. I would say it's even greater.
Thank you, Rick. And thank you all for bearing with us as we had a little bit of a problem getting started this morning, but we finally got it up and running, and we hope you were blessed by it. I know I was. We will see you all a week from today for another edition of the Revelation of Jesus. And we'll all see you all next Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific time for another edition of the Bible on Trial. On behalf of the Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis saying so long for now. God bless you, and we'll see you next week.